As you approach your birth, you may be considering delayed cord clamping. What are the pros and cons for you and your baby? I'm Ann Cooper, a certified nurse midwife, and today we're learning all about delayed cord clamping. This is Preggy Pals.
Is that a plus sign?
Pink or blue?
Hospital or home birth?
What type of food should I be eating?
I think I just peed myself.
I'm pregnant. And I have to exercise?
What pregnancy glow?
Wait, was that a contraction?
Gotta make these pants fit!
I've got kinkles!
What do you mean there's more than one?
You've got the symptoms, and now you've got the support you need for a happy 9 months. This is Preggy Pals, your pregnancy your way.
Welcome to Preggy Pals, broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. Preggy Pals is your online, on-the-go support group for expecting parents and those hoping to become pregnant. I'm your host, Stephanie Glover. Thanks to all of our loyal listeners who have joined the Preggy Pals Club. Our members get special episodes, bonus content after each new show, plus special giveaways and discounts. See our website for more information. Another way for you to stay connected is by downloading our free Preggy Pals app, available in the Android, iTunes, and Windows Marketplace. Samantha, our producer, is now going to give us some information about our virtual panelist program.
Thanks, Stephanie. So if you don't live in San Diego, but you'd like to be part of the discussion here on Preggy Pals, like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram, hashtag Preggy Pals. We'll post questions before our show starts, and we'd like for you to comment so we can incorporate your thoughts into our episode. For more information, head to our website, www.preggypals.com.
Great. So we're going to go ahead and introduce ourselves around the room here. My name is Stephanie Glover. I'm 32 years old. I'm the new host of Preggy Pals, and I'm also a stay-at-home mom to two little girls. Gretchen is almost 3, and Lydia is 10 months old. I had 2 hospital births, the first being a cesarean and the second a VBAC.
I'm Annie. I'm the former host of Preggy Pals, but I'm just hanging around until I move halfway across the world. I'm a labor doula. I'm 36 years old. And I have 3 little girls, a 9-year-old, a 2-year-old, and an 8-month-old. The first was a hospital birth, the second was a home birth, and that was a transfer into the hospital, and then the third was a home birth.
I'm Samantha. I am the producer here at Preggy Pals. I am 22 years old. I'm currently a stay-at-home mom to my 20-month-old Olivia. She was an unplanned cesarean, and I'm hoping for a VBAC sometime in the future.
Hi, Preggy Pals. We have a question for one of our experts. Nancy in La Jolla, California writes, is acupuncture effective for bringing on labor? My OBGYN is going to induce me if I get to 41 weeks, and I would like to avoid that if at all possible.
Hi, this is Jamie Boyd from Whole Family Acupuncture in San Diego, California. I specialize in women's health, women's and men's reproductive health, pregnancy, and pediatric acupuncture. And I'm responding to Nancy in La Jolla, also here in Southern California, asking if acupuncture is effective for bringing on labor, especially wanting to avoid induction at 41 weeks with her OBGYN. You know, it's a kind of a loaded question, depending on the state you're in, whether or not acupuncturists can say that they treat that. We have an encouraging labor protocol that we can use, and depending on the acupuncturist malpractice insurance, they may or may not be able to state that they do that, depending on the state. However, getting acupuncture throughout pregnancy, a lot of times, limits the chances or likelihood that induction will be necessary because the acupuncture will help organize and support the hormones in a woman's body to allow the oxytocin to start flowing and hopefully flow high enough in soon enough time that induction won't be necessary. The encouragement labor protocol is usually done daily for three treatments or every other day. And the protocol is to encourage oxytocin to be released in high amounts to allow your body to be less stressed out, which actually stressors are the main reason why women don't go into labor from our point of view, is that our cortisol and adrenaline spike so high that our oxytocin cannot fully flower and allow us to go completely into labor. And that's what Pitocin is just liquid oxytocin. So if we can keep a mom de-stressed and relaxed during those last weeks, they have a greater likelihood of going into labor naturally. And, you know, in order to avoid induction at 41 weeks, acupuncturists usually don't start any kind of protocol to have baby come before 40 weeks, pretty much across the board, unless it was something really specific going on. Otherwise, we always want to wait until the body's ready and the baby's ready before we start tinkering in any way. And you want to have an acupuncturist who knows specifically about how to treat women in pregnancy and treating women who are going into labor. So you really want to ask a lot of questions when calling for that sort of treatment. But it can help facilitate labor and hopefully avoid induction, which I know a lot of people really want to do. All right. Thank you.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTCAL.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
So today we're going to be talking about delayed cord clamping. Joining us here in our studio is certified nurse midwife Ann Cooper. Anne received her RN and Master's of Science in Nursing with a specialization in midwifery from Yale University. She currently practices with the UCSD Nurse Midwifery Service. Welcome to Preggy Pals, Anne. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So to begin with, why is the umbilical cord typically clamped after delivery? And what is the process?
Well, the process of clamping the cord is really the process of separating mom from the baby from each other and separating baby from the placenta. The process usually is putting two clamps on the umbilical cord, one closer to the baby, one closer to the placenta, and having somebody, usually dad, cut the umbilical cord.
Is delayed cord clamping new, or why are we hearing so much about it these days?
Delayed cord clamping is not new. It probably, immediate cord clamping is new in the history of birth. Delayed cord clamping is coming about because traditional medicine has usually been clamping the cord immediately following delivery of baby. I think more people are talking about it recently because there have been a series of studies looking at risks and benefits to delayed cord clamping.
Okay, great. And what typically happens during delayed cord clamping?
So typically after baby is delivered and born, depending on the practice of the provider, baby's put up on mom's chest or held by the provider. And in delayed cord clamping, it is not common. You don't put the clamps on the cord until usually by definition after a minute. Most of the studies look at delayed cord clamping is considered between 1 and 3 minutes. Where I practice and how I practice, for me, delayed cord clamping is not clamping the cord until the cord has done pulsing.
How long do you see that normally takes?
It's different for every mom.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's really quick and it might only be a minute that the cord pulses. Sometimes you've got a big, fat, juicy cord that seems to pulse and pulse and pulse for 5 minutes.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say like 30. So yeah.
I have not had a 30-minute a cord that has pulsed for 30 minutes. But it's really interesting. You can actually see it pulsing, and also feel the cord pulsing.
Oh, okay.
And Annie, did you delay cord clamp with your girls?
The second one was so chaotic. Like, I had her 20 minutes after I showed up in the hospital. It was a little bit different. There was meconium, and so they wanted to check her out on the infant warmer table. So they cut and clamped it immediately.
Right.
So afterwards, it just wasn't the place to say, excuse me, I want delayed cord clamping. But for the third one, I did. The biggest concern was just having my baby with me. Okay, I had a vaginal birth. It was normal, you know, natural thing. And now the baby's going to stay with me and stay on my chest. you know, and if you need to do anything, you can either do it with the baby on my chest. Mm-hmm. So I feel that for me, that's the advantage of why I wanted delayed cord clamping. And with my second baby, it was only in hindsight. So again, right. After the third one, you know, it was almost a little bit long on the other side. Like, okay, you know, I'm done with this. You know, the cord was white by then. There was no blood going through it for the past 45 minutes. So, yeah. But that is pretty neat. And, you know, you probably see that, and as far as, you know, how it starts out really thick with almost purplish.
Yeah.
And then, like, it goes down to, like, it's completely white. There's no blood in it at all. And it's so, so thin.
It changes dramatically
in
a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that there are benefits to delaying the cord clamping. What are some of those benefits?
So typically after the baby's born, the cord continues the pulse. And one of the benefits to baby is that the baby gets what's left over in the cord. So if you immediately put the clamps on the baby, on the cord, it kind of stops the blood flow to the baby. So it actually prevents them from getting all the red blood cells and all the nutrients, all the stem cells that are left in the cord. So typically a baby can get a lot more blood volume in the 3 minutes that you may wait, or even longer, to delay the cord clamping.
My midwife calls it the baby's first cord blood infusion. So,
yeah, there you
yes.
go.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. It's good stuff in there.
Are there benefits to mom?
I think one of the benefits that the studies miss talking about is really the benefit of being able to hold your baby and not having your baby taken from you, taken to the warmer, starting measurements, starting weights. And that's really not something that the studies address, but I think that is a very significant benefit to new families. And I think that's important when you're considering what hospital you or where you're having your baby, because a lot of places their instinct is take the baby right away and start maybe the newborn medications. If your baby's connected to you, connected to the placenta, your baby's not going anywhere.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. And then it helps with the skin to skin being having the temperature regulated.
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
And can I ask you a question? So would it still apply in the case of like a cesarean birth? I had an unplanned cesarean, and in my birth plan, as far as if a vaginal birth was going to happen, I did include delayed cord clamping. But things happen, and that's not the way that it was meant to be. But I'm also wondering, I didn't include in my cesarean birth plan to still do delayed cord clamping. Is that still a possibility or not so much?
So it's a little trickier with the cesarean section because you have a large incision on your uterus. The risk of bleeding to mom is much greater.
Right. I assume they don't want you open any longer than you really need to be.
So it's going to be dependent on the situation and how your bleeding is going. Most of the time, if things are going okay and you're not bleeding too much, they can delay it up to like 30 seconds. So you're not going to get the total pulsation. Another option that you could consider asking for is something called cord milking, which is where they take the cord and using their hands or an instrument, they milk the cord towards the baby. So, and in fact, it's like delayed cord clamping in that you're emptying the cord into the baby. And
so
that's
like an expedited,
delayed
cord clamping.
Exactly. And they are looking at those studies, especially in preterm infants, too.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Great. So, you know, we've touched on some of the benefits, but are there any risks to the baby?
So historically, the risks that have been used to kind of advocate for immediate clamping would be risks to mom having too much bleeding, waiting for the placenta to come. The idea of baby comes out, got to get the placenta out right away, clamp the cord, pull on the placenta, deliver the placenta so that you don't have maternal hemorrhage. Mm-hmm. The studies have not supported that delayed cord clamping causes any increased maternal hemorrhage. Another risk that is discussed when talking about delayed cord clamping is to the baby, and that is that the increase of the red blood cells when you do a delayed cord clamping has been shown to increase neonatal jaundice, and sometimes and those babies do have an increased risk of needing phototherapy.
Yep, I I had delayed cord clamping and phototherapy for my baby.
Well, I have a question about that, because one of the things I've heard with a few care practitioners is they say something with gravity and they want to hold the baby down below the level of the placenta. Have you heard anything about that, Anne?
Yeah. So they have had a study that showed, you know, the thought was that you have to, if you put baby up on mom's chest and the baby's higher, there's a potential risk that the blood flow is going to go back
into
to
the placenta.
Yeah. And the baby's going to lose blood volume that way. The research doesn't support that. And they've looked at it in delayed clamping, that the pulsation from the placenta is so strong that gravity is not a factor.
It's negated.
Yeah. I mean, I think that most of the time when you accept your baby on your chest, you are lying back and you're not that much higher than your placenta. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's a reason not to do delayed cord clamping.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when you have delayed cord clamping, can your partner still cut the cord?
Absolutely.
Does it change any part of the cord cutting process?
Not at all.
Okay. Well, when we come back, we'll discuss delayed cord clamping with different birthing options. Welcome back. Today we're discussing delayed cord clamping. Ann Cooper is our expert. So we were talking about benefits and risks to mom and baby regarding delayed cord clamping, but we'd love to learn more about the different birthing options and if delayed cord clamping is possible. We already talked about cesarean delivery, but what about a water birth? And what is that possible to delay your cord clamping?
A water birth is the perfect venue for delayed cord clamping. When you're in the water, you know, you have your baby on your chest, and that's what you're concentrating on. You're focused on your baby. And so often, depending on, you know, you and your provider, the placenta is not delivered till after you get out of the tub, or the cord is not even cut sometimes till after the placenta is delivered. So yes, absolutely. Water birth and delayed cord clamping go hand in hand.
Awesome. And if you're saving your placenta, are there any effects on cord clamping then?
I do not know of any effects on saving the placenta and delaying cord clamping.
And then can a premature baby have delayed cord clamping? I think you touched on this a little bit, but...
Well, like with cord milking, because
Yeah. So the American Academy of Obstetricians and Gynecologists actually has a very strong statement that it supports delayed cord clamping in premature infants. Their stance on that is even stronger than term infants. And that's because all of the evidence really supports delayed cord clamping for preterm infants and a reduction of the intraventricular hemorrhage and decrease in risk of bleeding in the baby's brain to preterm infants.
And how about you, Anne? I mean, you're a mother of three. What was your experience with delayed cord clamping? Did you do it?
I did delayed cord clamping with all three. None of my three needed phototherapy, thankfully. Nice. I had my first at home, and it was 10 years ago now, but I think the cord stayed connected to her for quite some time. And the second was born in the water, and we did delayed cord clamping. And last one was at UCSD and did delayed cord clamping with all of them. And I found it just really rewarding to have my baby with me on my chest, even start breastfeeding before my placenta was out, before the cord was done pulsing. So for me, that was a big benefit of delaying the cord clamping. And that's what I hear a lot from patients, too, is that a lot of my patients want the cord to be completely done pulsing before it's cut. Some of them want their placenta to be delivered prior to cutting the cord. And as long as, you know, bleeding is fine, I think that that's fine. And those are things that can happen. And it's something that you should talk to your provider about ahead of time if you want that.
Yeah. And I thought, too, that just the conversation about delayed cord clamping really opened up kind of a lot of cool things about the cord and the placenta, because with my C-section, I didn't even get to see my placenta. And so I just remember it was just a different approach. We talked about it. We let it finish pulsing, and then I got to see it afterwards, and it was a pretty cool thing. Well, and I have actually a funny story about that. When I delivered my first via cesarean, my OB did mentioned that she would milk the cord, so we did get the expedited benefits of that.
Yeah.
But everyone in the operating room was commenting that it was the largest cord they'd ever seen.
Not largest or like longest? Thickest. Oh,
like,
really?
Yeah, like very thick cord.
Oh.
And
how big was your baby?
9'5".
Okay.
So she was big. As was her cord.
Yeah.
And my husband does not do blood. So he was like, no thanks. I want nothing to do with cutting this cord. Ah. And the nurses were like, are you sure? You'll regret it. And so he did. And it took him several attempts to cut it and sort of traumatized him. And so for the second, I was like, really, you don't have to do this. And then he thought he needed to be fair to our second daughter and he couldn't cut one and not the other. But the difference was is that we had the delayed cord clamping the second time. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't messy. We had, gone, let it pulse completely, empty, if you will. And so when it was cut, it didn't.
Now, Stephanie, did you say that your second, that you didn't need the phototherapy lights or you did?
I did. So my first was not, didn't have any, increased bilirubin levels. Mm-hmm. My second did. And it's funny because I was jaundiced as a baby. Mm-hmm. So I just sort of wasn't surprised. I was like, oh, I know that word. I know what it means. And we'll just deal with this.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really until after my birth and getting home that I think the pediatrician had mentioned that there's sometimes the association between delayed cord clamping and and jaundice. But to me, I just thought, well, I had it. So maybe that's why. I'm not sure really how much had to do with
And it could be because you had it, and that was why. It's hard to know.
But my birth was just so lovely that it wouldn't have really mattered about any of the effects of afterwards because I had my sort of dream birth the second time around. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Are there any times that delayed cord clamping is inappropriate?
Unfortunately, yes. Sometimes there seems to be a delay in the neonatal resuscitation and the way that we resuscitate our babies after they're born. Most of the time that's not done on mom. It's overdone on a warmer. So, and that's where they're most comfortable right now doing neonatal resuscitation. So usually when babies come out and are maybe depressed and not vigorous, not breathing on their own, there is a desire to have them over on the warmer sooner, and so by means of clamping and cutting the cord. Another time would be if you had meconium stain fluid. If there's meconium in your fluid and the baby comes out and is not vigorous, the recommendation is to suction the baby's nose and mouth before the baby takes a deep breath to prevent the risk of meconium aspiration. So in both of those cases, I think that delayed cord clamping beyond the initial period of, putting the clamps on, it would be not advised.
What do you mean by vigorous? Because, and I had a question about that. I mentioned earlier that my second child, and my first child, actually, there was meconium in the waters with both of them, but they came out screaming. So
that is vigorous.
That is vigorous. So in a, really, it would have been fine. In fact, preferable to, would they still do the bulb suction then?
No.
With the baby or no? Oh, okay.
So the recommendation for suctioning is if you have a baby who comes out who is limp, not breathing, not trying to make a cry, hasn't gasped yet, to take them to the warmer and before you stimulate them, to look into their throat and try to suction any of the meconium fluid.
Mm-hmm.
And so that usually if a baby comes out vigorous and screaming, you're supposed to just observe them.
Okay.
Are there any common objections to delayed cord clamping and any studies that support the objections?
So the reason that there is mixed evidence on delayed cord clamping. As much as we want to do delayed cord clamping, the evidence, it does support that infants who have delayed cord clamping have a lower risk of anemia in the first year of life and have increased hemoglobin in the first few months of life. But it does also suggest that they also have an increased risk of jaundice and phototherapy in the first days after delayed clamping.
And what would you say to parents who are trying to make the decision if delayed cord clamping is right for them? How would they make that decision?
I'd say that in talking to where they're delivering and what their provider is comfortable with and what their own desires are for where they want their baby to be after their baby is delivered. I think that women who potentially have an increased risk of maybe babies with jaundice, maybe if you've had a history of having a baby that has needed phototherapy before, or women with diabetes, some habit time have an increased risk of babies that need phototherapy. Those are situations that you may want to consider maybe not the full delay or not delaying the clamping.
Okay.
And talking to your provider to see if you have any risk factors that they think that it's not appropriate to do delayed clamping.
And if you just delay for, say, the minute versus the full five, then the risks of, you know, some of those risks go down proportionally?
Well, they haven't done any studies. Okay. I looked at those risks. But if you're thinking about, you know, most of the volume of the cord, about 80% of the volume of the cord will be given to the baby in the first minute.
Oh, okay.
So actually, after a minute, there's not a whole lot extra that goes in based on, like, the values that they've looked at in studies.
Thank you so much, Anne Cooper, for joining us today. For more information about Certified Nurse Midwife Anne Cooper and the UCSD Midwife Practice, as well as information about any of our panelists, visit our episode page on our website. This conversation continues for members of the Preggy Pals Club. After the show, Anne Cooper is discussing delayed cord clamping and cord blood banking. To join our club, visit our website, preggypals.com.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Durbin, the author of Pregnancy Tips for the Clueless Chick and the mother of two wonderful little boys. I've got some great tips for you for planning your maternity leave. Believe it or not, it's never too early to start planning your maternity leave. And if you plan to go back to work, you'll want to start thinking about daycare sooner rather than later. In some cities, you may need to register your little one for daycare when you're only 12 weeks pregnant, so plan ahead. Before you let your boss know that you're expecting, it's a good idea to have your maternity leave plans all worked out. So start reading your company's leave policies, including short-term disability, and look into FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act. Your HR department or a trusted coworker who's taken maternity leave are other fabulous resources. When you talk to your boss, he or she will likely want to know when you're due, how long you plan to be on maternity leave, and if you'll be returning to your current work schedule. So make sure you and your partner have worked through all of these details beforehand. But keep in mind, once you hold that little bundle of joy in your arms, all of your carefully laid plans may be thrown right out the window. If you do decide to go back to work, don't underestimate how challenging your transition back may be. Not only will you be readjusting to work, you'll also be adjusting to your baby's new childcare routine. You should also keep in mind that your first week back at the office will be very draining, so it's a good idea to plan to take Friday off to recoup. The worst thing you can do is run yourself ragged trying to do everything, so plan for that extra day of vacation. You can also save yourself a bit of transition stress by having the little one start daycare the week before you go back to work. That way you have plenty of time to ease into your new normal. But most importantly, take into consideration the financial implications of your plan so that you're fully prepared for what lies ahead. For more great tips, visit cluelesschick.com.
So this wraps up the show for today. We appreciate you listening to Preggy Pals. Don't forget to check out our sister shows, Parent Savers for parents with newborns, infants, and toddlers, Twin Talks for parents of multiples, and our show The Boob Group for moms who breastfeed their babies. This is Preggy Pals, your pregnancy your way.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating healthcare problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified healthcare provider.
New Mommy Media is expanding our lineup of shows for new and expecting parents. If you have an idea for a new series, or if you're a business or organization interested in joining our network of shows through a co-branded podcast, visit newmommymedia.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, mamas, don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.